from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, one day out from Election Day. And the polls, who knows, show on average a 1.9% advantage nationally for Hillary Clinton. That is slim. Passions are high. This campaign has gone into some ugly territory. Donald Trump is shouting, rigged. This hour, On Point, closing arguments and the final battle for the White House. We're going to hear in this hour from former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm, a big Clinton supporter, her state an unexpected battleground right now, and from Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, who has been a stalwart throughout this campaign for Donald Trump. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on, what do you see at stake in tomorrow's vote? What do you now see coming? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Over the weekend, here was Hillary Clinton laying out what she says in Manchester, New Hampshire yesterday, what she says is at stake in this election.
This election is a moment of reckoning. It is a choice between division or unity, between strong, steady leadership or a loose cannon who could put everything at risk.
A loose cannon could put everything at risk, and Donald Trump yesterday not backing off his attacks of Hillary Clinton, even after FBI Director James Comey sent a letter to Congress, essentially clearing legally Clinton a second time on the email front. But here was Donald Trump yesterday at a rally in Minneapolis.
Hillary Clinton will be under investigation for a long, long time for her many crimes against our nation, our people, our democracy, likely concluding in a criminal trial. No, you have to understand, it's a rigged system, and she's protected.
You hear all that, lock her up. And Donald Trump, in spite of James Comey coming out yesterday, talking there about a criminal trial for his opponent. Joining me first today, we'll have Jennifer Granholm and Jeff Sessions in just a few minutes. But first today from New York is Sahil Kapoor, national political reporter for Bloomberg Politics. Sahil, welcome to On Point. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
And with us from Washington is Ed O'Keefe. He covers the 2016 presidential campaign for the Washington Post. Ed, welcome back to you as well.
Great to be with you, Tom.
So as we sit here now, 1.9%, I'm reading here, is an average lead across all polls by Hillary Clinton. That's within a margin of error. Is this a comfortable and uncomfortable lead or barely a lead at all?
It's not a comfortable lead in the popular vote for Hillary Clinton, but she has a much more comfortable edge in the Electoral College. So if you run the math right now, Donald Trump has to win Florida, he has to win North Carolina, he has to win Ohio, Iowa, and something else just to get to 270. She has many paths to 270. Donald Trump has a narrow one. And a number of these states like North Carolina and Florida, they're on a razor's edge. He cannot count on having them banked. And he's going to have to fight really hard to get the vote out. And it's still unclear. So right now, if you're Hillary Clinton, you're feeling a lot better than Donald Trump about your prospects in the Electoral College.
Sahil, what do you see in these critical states? Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, Iowa. How do they look for Donald Trump, for Hillary Clinton at this point, the day before the election?
Right now, Nevada was supposed to be a state that was competitive. Donald Trump, this would have substantially helped Donald Trump's path to 270 votes, but the early vote does not look good for him. About 70% of the vote is in. Hillary Clinton is doing better than President Obama did in 2012, and she's outpacing that margin. And unless Donald Trump wins Nevada on Election Day by about 10 points, he's probably lost a state. In Florida and North Carolina, it's an interesting story. The Latino vote is significantly up in the early vote in many states. The African-American vote is down in North Carolina. It's up a little bit in Florida, so that's a bit of a mixed bag for Hillary Clinton. She needs minorities to turn out. She needs millennials, and she needs unmarried women. The Obama coalition that powered him twice. She needs these people in big numbers.
Ed, what about the Latino vote and the African-American vote? I mean, I'm seeing here in Florida about 1 million of the nearly 6.2 million early votes counted as of early Sunday cast by Hispanics, an increase of almost 75% over 2012. That's Florida. Nevada, also record turnout on Friday by Hispanic voters.
How do you see that turnout? And what about enthusiasm, turnout in the African American community? Do these offset one another, or are they playing out in different arenas where different demographics will make the difference?
Well, let's start with the African-American vote. We got some word here at the Post this morning from smart people who tracked the black vote in Florida, especially that already there it has turnout has been exceeded compared to 2012. So at least among early
voters.
Talking
early voting, okay.
Yeah. And we got to remember in Florida, there's all this talk about early vote and the encouraging things that Democrats are seeing. Remember, there's a lot of mail-in ballots as well, absentee ballots across that state. They come from predominantly older and predominantly military voters. Those are not people necessarily that are Democratic voters. So anyone who thinks that the Democrats have put this away with early voting needs to remember that there are ballots that are sent in the mail and they count just as much, and Democrats are not winning there. When it comes to the Hispanic vote overall, it's also very important to remember this, Tom. I'm Hispanic. I've been tracking this myself throughout the year. Everyone needs to remember that between now and at least 2032, every 4 years, the Hispanic turnout will be historic because growth rates are such that more Hispanics are becoming eligible to vote, more are being found and registered to vote if they aren't already, more are becoming citizens, yes, but that's a smaller percentage overall. The question is, does every 4 years the turnout rate among Hispanics exceed the high 40s and low 50s? Mm. It was 48% in 2012, which was down from 2008. This year, it's looking like it might hit or slightly exceed 50%. That would be an encouraging sign for Hispanic participation. And remember, 50% turnout is still far below white and black turnout in this country, which usually hits the 60s. So there's still a huge amount of untapped potential in the Hispanic vote across the country. What the early vote suggests, though, in Florida, in Nevada, in Arizona and Colorado especially, and Texas, though it isn't a battleground, is that people are indeed responding to what Trump has been doing and saying for more than a year. The question is, will they also show up tomorrow, or have all the Hispanic votes, in essence, most of them, already been cast?
And what about African-American? I mean, you've got, you know, Michelle Obama out there, the president, I mean, Jay-Z, Beyonce, LeBron, and of course, all kinds of people that everybody's listening to, African-Americans included. What about their turnout this year and the significance?
Well, like I said, in Florida, it looks like they may have exceeded the turnout that they saw 4 years ago. There's concern that the early vote turnout among African Americans is down a little bit in North Carolina, a state that would require strong black turnout for a Democrat to win the presidency in that state. Look, there's no other way to say it. Frankly, there isn't an African American candidate on the ballot, so it's very likely that African-American turnout will be slightly lower because there isn't as much enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton as there was over the last 8 years for Barack Obama. That's understandable. They've tried by sending, of course, the president and the first lady into states that have predominant African-American communities, big voting blocks, and we'll see whether or not it pays off tomorrow. But everyone that you talk to about this stuff says, look, some drop-off is inevitable and expected and makes sense. Because he was a historic candidate,
sure.
She would be a historic candidate, certainly, but in a different regard.
Yeah. So what about these states that Donald Trump would love to flip? I mean, as we've been talking about, Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, Iowa, but blue states, Minnesota, long shot, Michigan, he spent a lot of time there. We're going to talk with former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm in a minute. Can he, could he, might he flip Michigan? Well, how's it look?
Pretty unlikely, Tom. I think he's closed the gap to maybe 4 to 6 points, which is what it tends to be in, somewhere like Wisconsin or Pennsylvania. They've been blue since the 1980s, but they haven't been blue by as big margins as states like New York and California have. So Donald Trump has been visiting these states. He's been rallying in these states on a sort of 13 or 14 rally blitz in the last 3 days, including today. He even went to Minnesota, which is an even bluer state. So yep. I think what he's trying to do is in the upper Midwest and the Great Lakes, the Rust Belt state, he needs to win some of those states because he cannot count, just as we talked about, he cannot count on simply the traditional swing states flipping his way. And the reason he has some potential there is that those states have a higher concentration of white voters. And more importantly, they have a higher concentration of white voters without college degrees. This is a huge, huge pro-Trump voting bloc. He's winning them by about 2-1, as much as 60-30% in some recent polls, far exceeding what previous Republican nominees like Mitt Romney and John McCain did. And this is his best shot to do it. Not only does he have that demographic, but he has the message there. This is a home, obviously, to America's manufacturing sector, once much more vibrant than it is today. They've faced a lot of jobs in manufacturing loss, and he has a message that is blame the trade deals like NAFTA and potentially the TPP for this, blame higher levels of immigration, and blame political elites for ignoring your interests and looking down on you. He has that message. It resonates. Whether it's enough remains to be seen. These are Democratic-leaning states. And remember, Donald Trump is also the corollary to his strength with working-class white voters is that he's on pace to be the first Republican presidential nominee since at least 1956 to lose white voters with a college degree.
That's a long time.
So that would
time.
Be historic in itself.
Yes, Hillary Clinton was.
Right, and probably before, probably since World War II, but we don't have data before 1956.
Ed, Donald Trump keeps talking about a Brexit outcome here, where the polls didn't show Brexit winning, but it did. He says there's a rabbit in his hat. It's going to be a Brexit. What about that? Is there justification for that view?
Look, there's reams of polling that suggests otherwise. But I sympathize with that point slightly, in that so much of what has been predicted, either through modeling or just through analysis, has been wrong, not only in this country this year but everywhere else. I'm not in the business of picking a winner in advance,
yep.
of trying to play with the maps and figure out which ones go red and blue, although some are obvious. I think when it comes to the 15 to 20 states that are in play tomorrow, it would be foolish to try to sit here tonight and try to forecast when exactly, or how exactly a state may go. But, you know, the fundamentals are such that they still continue to favor her. And we'll see. We'll just have to wait and see.
Sile, very briefly, will he concede? He keeps talking rigged very, very loudly over this weekend. Rigged.
This is a very important question. I don't think anybody really knows the answer. I'm not even sure Donald Trump's top aides know the answer. Most of his campaign advisors have been saying he will accept a clear outcome, but Donald Trump has distorted the meaning of that term. He has not indicated that if this election does get called against him, that he's going to concede. And he's sort of raised fears and alarms about voter fraud, even though there's very little evidence.
Hold the thought right there, if you would, with Bloomberg. Ed O'Keefe with The Washington Post. We're hearing closing arguments. Jennifer Granholm, Jeff Sessions, join us when we return. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We are talking closing arguments in the race for the White House this hour on the last day before voting, before Election Day, with an eye on each campaign's final push here. You can join us. What do you see at stake in tomorrow's vote? How do you see the stakes? Have you made up your mind? Have you voted already? How did you decide? Jeff Sessions, Alabama senator, one of the first to endorse Donald Trump among U.S. senators in April, will join us in a few moments. Right now, from Washington, Jennifer Granholm joins us. She is strong surrogate for Hillary Clinton. We've got Ed O'Keefe with The Washington Post and Sahil Kapoor with the Bloomberg Politics listening in. Want to hear closing arguments for the Democratic candidate, and Jennifer Granholm is here to do that. Governor Granholm, thanks very much for being with us.
You bet, Tom. Glad to be on.
Here we are. It's all on the table, all the marbles tomorrow. You hear Donald Trump out there, and he's saying, look, Hillary's an insider. She's been an insider for a long time. Don't go there. I'm new. I'm different. Go with me. What do you say?
I say, first of all, Hillary is a name that's new in terms of the gender of somebody in the White House, but that's really not her closing argument. That's important to me. And I want to talk about her, not about Donald Trump. So I would say to people to vote for her because of who we are as a nation and because of what she'll do as well. So with respect to who we are, I mean, her campaign has been focused on the language stronger together because it recognizes that in this nation of immigrants, unless you're a Native American, whether your people came here across the Arizona border or via American Airlines or were brought here in chains on the Amistad, we are together this amazing country that welcomes all people, that our diversity is our American exceptionalism. It's our competitive advantage. It's our DNA. It's who we are. We build bridges, not walls, as the Pope said. And then this stronger together frame also means Democrats and independents and Republicans, that we are all in this together. And after this campaign, can we recognize that all of us love this country and that everyone may have a different way to continue to make our country great, but that if we listen to one another, if we are willing to reach across the aisle, we can actually accomplish a lot. And just one moment on that, what a lot is, if I can. What she'll do, the policies that she put out, and unfortunately there's been so little airtime that in the campaign overall devoted to policy, but just a sample of her agenda that would grow people's incomes. And every one of these that I'm about to mention, just quickly, are paid for. So her focus in the first 100 days is going to be on jobs, on a $500 billion infrastructure plan, putting people to work building roads and bridges, but also broadband and transmission and dilapidated schools and replacing underground pipes. She's also going to focus on clean energy. She has called for 500 million solar panels so that every home in the country is powered by renewable energy. Panels that are stamped Made in America, a $60 billion clean energy challenge to states and to cities. She's put on the table incentives to keep advanced manufacturing and research and development and encouraging the growth of industrial clusters, particularly in the hardest hit communities, and growing small businesses. She says she wants to be the small business president. And for the students out there, she wants you to be able to refinance your student loans. She wants to lower the cost of college. She wants to get more people to go to college and lower those costs. And for parents who have got child care costs, so that the cost of daycare doesn't exceed 10% of a family's income. She's got that as a strategy in the first 200 days.
Governor Granholm, let me come in here, because on this show we have talked about all of these, you'll be happy to know, and talked
I'm
about...
I'm happy to hear that.
But let me ask you, if this agenda is so good, why is this race so close?
I don't think it is that close.
1.9% is the average in polling. Do you think the polls are wrong?
No, I think that in this closing, especially with the Comey thing being resolved, I think people are recognizing that as a nation, we cannot go with somebody who has been so utterly divisive, and I said I wasn't going to talk about him, but so utterly divisive and deceptive. And you may not love her. You don't have to go to have a beer with her. Although I know her and I love her and I think she is fabulous as a human being, and I don't know why she gets this terrible rap. But the bottom line is, I think in the end here, you will see this 5% that these national polls are showing, 6% on the national level. You'll see it borne out in the campaign on the ground in these states. That the reason why you're seeing this surge in early voting, particularly in communities that have not participated fully, this is their moment as well.
But let's acknowledge the division here. It may be a different margin, but there's a lot of people ready to go the other way. Never mind Donald Trump if you don't want to talk about him, but talk about American voters who are looking toward him, to him, in these rallies, cheering for him. What, as a Clinton supporter, what do you see going on there?
I see a lot of what was written about in the book Hillbilly Elegy, where there are people who feel like their communities have been left behind, and they have been. And I do think I applaud the emphasis on trade and on making sure that we keep jobs in this country. So I think there is a very important economic element. But she's addressing that with specific policies. Her policies that objective reporters have, not just reporters, but think tanks and analysts have looked at, will create 10 million jobs. And his policies, they say, would put us into recession. So the question is for those voters who she wants to reach out to, because she wants to be the president for all, those voters, I would hope, I hope that even if they don't vote for her tomorrow, that they will be satisfied that there is somebody there who is going to fight for them, policy-wise, and hopefully for their hearts as well.
If they don't flip the Senate, there was a lot of talk about that after James Comey came out. It looks now like that may be less likely. We'll see. But if they don't, and she's still facing a Republican House of Representatives, how does she work with Capitol Hill, where some people are already saying, Donald Trump says, he still wants investigations, charges, criminal charges. You've got some in the Senate saying we're not going to cooperate on any Supreme Court nominee from Hillary Clinton. If it's President Hillary Clinton, how does she work with a Republican in Congress?
Right. I mean, first of all, she has a history of being able to reach across the aisle and do that very well. But I would also say to those who mistake, if they keep the House and the Senate, if they misread those polls that say wrong track to assume that it is President Obama's policies and not the behaviors of those in Congress, they are woefully misreading it. The people do not want obstruction. They want progress. It's the reason why Congress's approval rating in polls shows at below 20%, whereas President Obama's approval rating is above 50%. That gap is a misread on their part. They think it's all attributable to the president. So the bottom line is you cannot have a slow coup, as Bill Maher said on his show on Friday night. You can't have a delegitimizing the election by throwing investigation after investigation in Congress or by saying you're not going to approve for appointees, because I think the citizens will slap that very hard. They got to listen to the people. And frankly, I hope that the people who are listening here send a message that it's we want people to work together and to put people in office who are willing to work for progress and not against it.
And what about your home state? Donald Trump making a big push there in the last week and change for Michigan itself. Blue state, big blue state in recent elections. Is it on the line? Could Hillary lose it to Donald Trump tomorrow?
I don't see that happening. They have, there's one indication, yes, it is not a state where you stand in line and do early voting, but you do have absentee ballots that are early votes. And they have collected a large number of absentee ballots. And in those absentee ballots, Democrats have built up a 50,000 bank, this 50,000 vote bank, meaning more, 50,000 more Democratic ballots than Republicans. And in addition to that, the polls have not shown Donald Trump ahead once. In fact, the latest poll out last night had her up 6 points. So I think she will take Michigan, and I think her message about even trade, where he goes to Macomb County and talks about jobs and trade, the voters in those polls trust her more on trade, believe it or not, than him. I think Michigan will be blue.
Let me ask you this. A lot of millennials lined up for Bernie Sanders. We've got a lot of them talking to us right now as you and I are on the air. And Ben in Austin, Texas is saying, look, I was a Bernie supporter. He says he's undecided, and he's wondering if you can convince him to vote for Hillary Clinton. He says, I'm moving to Amsterdam because I'm scared about the future of the country. He wants to vote, but he's still at this late date unpersuaded. What do you say to Ben and other Sanders supporters like him, still not ready to go Hillary?
Yeah, I wish I knew what Ben's issue is, but Bernie Sanders was so strong, for example, on climate change. She has got a huge climate change strategy to make sure that we lead and not follow the rest of the globe in reducing greenhouse gases and in generating our own renewable energy. If he cares about regulating Wall Street, the analysts have said that she has the toughest regulations on Wall Street, including regulating the shadow banks that have caused the demise of so much in our financial sector. If he cares about student loans, she's working with him. And if he gets elected, he's going to be chairman of the budget committee potentially. So to have a partner like that in the White House would further the policies that Bernie Sanders had been championing. Please don't throw this moment away. Do not throw your vote away. Please vote. It is so important for the nation and the future. And that way, you won't have to move to Amsterdam.
Ed O'Keefe, you're listening here with the Washington Post. It's Sahil Kapoor with Bloomberg. Jeff Sessions joins us in just a moment. But here's Jennifer Granholm. She's been stumping all over for Hillary Clinton. Ed, what's the question? Or as she makes the case, what are you thinking? What comes to your mind?
Well, Governor, your justification for why Michigan will stay blue, you're clearly confident. But they must have seen something there in the last 10 days or so that made them think it was at least worth trying. Do you concede that perhaps the Clinton campaign could have paid more attention to the Wolverine state?
I don't think that's why, honestly. I mean, we're thrilled that all of this attention is happening. We love to have that. But I think that some of that tightening, like in other polls, like you saw in New Hampshire, was as a result of this, of independents being unsure because of the Comey investigation. Now that that has been resolved, I think you will see people breaking more for her. Now, yes, there has been a tightening, and I certainly acknowledge that, just like there has been a tightening all over the country. He thinks he can get Michigan because of his language on trade and on NAFTA. But ironically, she has the same position in this sense that she says she would renegotiate NAFTA as well, and she's not going to sign any trade agreements that don't bring jobs to America. So I just don't I don't know what other argument he has. And certainly bringing someone like Ted Nugent, which he brought last night, who is the most offensive of the offensive. He's just, it's unbelievable to me. She's campaigning with, you know, Kazir Khan, this elegant, totally wonderful human being, and he's got Ted Nugent of all people. So bottom line, I don't think Michigan's going to buy that, and I think Michigan will rally around her big time. Big lead.
Jennifer Granholm.
Tom, can I jump in for a second?
Yeah, just for a second. We got Jeff Sessions coming in just a moment here. Quickly.
Sure. Governor, I had one question for you. Firstly, she's right. I can insta-fact check this. She's right that there's not a single poll since at least July that has showed Hillary Clinton not winning Michigan. But, Governor, I'm wondering what you think the Democrats... how Democrats can reach this voting bloc, given that Michigan is whiter than the country as a whole, it is less educated in terms of college degrees in the country as a whole, and it does seem to be trending a little bit in the direction of where Republicans are strong. Do you think this is a challenge for Democrats, and how do you keep Michigan blue?
Yeah, I think that Democrats absolutely have to listen to the workers who have been disproportionately negatively impacted by trade. There is no doubt that that Democrats have got to listen to people no matter where they are, in the rural areas, in the suburban areas, in manufacturing communities. And that's why having a strategic plan to create industrial clusters in manufacturing, advanced manufacturing, those kinds of things, making good middle-class jobs, jobs where you don't necessarily have to get a college degree, although we do want people to continue to pursue higher education. Having policies that do that are critical to being able to reach out, including listening. She's going to build a cabinet that looks like America. Those folks will be heard, but so will the rest of the country as well.
Governor
That's
Jennifer,
what makes me proud.
Governor Jennifer Granholm, former Democratic governor of Michigan, with us today in support of Hillary Clinton. We're grateful to you for taking the time today on the eve of the election. Thank you very much, Governor Granholm.
Thanks, Tom. You bet.
Ed O'Keefe, Sahil Kapoor, stand by. Jeff Sessions is with us. Here was Donald Trump, his guy, yesterday at a rally in Sioux City, Iowa, saying he's the one who cares about the average American.
Hillary's an insider fighting only for herself and her special interests. I'm an outsider. I've become an outsider fighting for you. I'm not a politician. You, the American people, are my only special interest.
Donald Trump in Sioux City, Iowa yesterday. Right now from Washington, U.S. Senator Jeff Sessions joins us. Republican senator from Alabama endorsed Donald Trump, first senator to do so in April of this year, and has been a very strong supporter right in the Trump wheelhouse working on the campaign. Senator Sessions, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, good to be with you.
We are looking for closing arguments today, and after everything we've seen and heard, what's your strongest for your guy, Donald Trump?
Well, I would say that what is Hillary Clinton proposing for the future? It's just more of the same. There's no real sense that she's committed in any way to any real alteration of the path we're on. And by a 3-to-1 margin, people think we're on a wrong track, and we are in our country. Donald Trump is a change agent. He's correct on trade. He's correct on immigration. He's correct on we've been involved in excessive foreign military adventures. He's correct on that we've got to replace in Obamacare. So there's just a whole lot of issues that he's crystal clear on and that the American people favor. And he has the, he's more independent, really. He's less part of the Republican establishment. He's repeatedly said he wants to get people around the table and get some things done and go beyond just talk, as former Secretary Clinton does, and they're good talkers, but sometime we need to get some results, and he's a man that seeks results. So I think it's the right time, and I believe his message is really good throughout the country.
Is he going to tear this country apart? Is he doing it already? There's a level of anger and vitriol and, you know, racially loaded commentary right now in this election that I cannot recall from any earlier campaign.
Donald Trump is talking about one America, treating people as Americans first, whereas you've got this constant problem of Secretary Clinton and Barack Obama appealing to one group against another one. I was shocked at Obama's conversation with a Hispanic reporter who, when he didn't condemn her argument that people illegally here were citizens and ought to be able to vote. This is a pandering and a dividing of America. He said that people didn't want Hispanics or to vote. That's not true.
But is Donald Trump appealing to white Americans?
If they're here, they should be able to. Everybody believes they should vote. That's divisive. I got to tell you, that's the kind of thing that's causing a problem, and it's why we've gotten more hostility now than we used to have.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Goldman Sachs. Get insights from some of the world's leading thinkers on markets, industries, and the global economy in the firm's podcast, Exchanges at Goldman Sachs. You'll hear discussions on topics with far-reaching implications like climate change, autonomous driving, the future of China's economic growth, plus much more. That's Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play, and at gs.com/podcast.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are hearing closing arguments this hour in the race for the White House. Voting day, election day tomorrow. We heard from former governor of Michigan, Jennifer Granholm, in support of Hillary Clinton. Right now with us from Washington is U.S. Senator Jeff Sessions, a strong Donald Trump supporter. Sahil Kapoor and Ed O'Keefe with us as well from Bloomberg Politics and The Washington Post. You can join us. What do you see unfolding right now? How have you decided already? Have you voted already? How will you vote? Jeff Sessions, we've got lots of people lining up here with questions and calls for you. I've got one right here from Colfax, Wisconsin. Willem, you're on with the U.S. Senator in favor of Donald Trump's presidency. What's your question, Willem?
Hi, Tom, and hi, Mr. Sessions. I couldn't disagree more with Mr. Sessions about his assertions about Donald Trump as an individual. I think that he has personally exported jobs to China to produce his work. He's used the bankruptcy system to force people who've done work for him to sue him to be equally paid. He's used illegal Polish workers on his projects. He doesn't understand.
Come to a question, Willem, if you would.
Well, the question is, how can you defend this man who has no respect for the Constitution, for the First Amendment, for instance? He excludes certain press people from his, he calls out individual people of the press. Katie Tour needs a Secret Service person to protect her because of Donald Trump's.
Senator Sessions,
jump in here.
Well, look, Donald Trump is honest about how he has done his business. He has used the trade laws and the manufacturing rules that exist out there today. He says those rules, from his personal experience and knowledge, and for many years, decades really, he has felt these rules have not sufficiently protected the interests of the American people. And there absolutely is no doubt that if Donald Trump is elected president, he will do a more aggressive job in protecting American manufacturing and American jobs, and he knows how to do it. He knows the leverage we have with regard to our trading partners, how they've taken advantage of the system, but he knows also that they have to have our markets. And so if we negotiate effectively, we can improve these situations, protect the American manufacturing base, and leave America in a much better place with higher wage jobs for American workers.
I always want to ask how we know he's been honest about his business when he won't put his tax returns out there like every other major candidate for decades and decades. I just don't get that.
Well, he's done it. We can go back to that. But look, he's done the for the disclosure forms that are hundreds of pages.
That's much less informative.
Tax returns because they're under audit, and that's
they're always under audit.
If you want to keep talking about that, we can.
Well,
but I'd like to talk about what the challenge is for America.
Well, let's talk about trade then, if we could, General Sessions.
Has not been healthy, and we need to fix it, and that will impact the lifestyle, incomes, and jobs of Americans who are struggling today.
How do we do that without launching a trade war with China, let's say?
That's a good question, but you either at a point where you allow your trading partners to take advantage of us and push back or not push back. We've not pushed back. You have to use the power that we have. China needs our market. We just need to say to them, if you're going to have access to our market, then you've got to have a good trading policy. With regard to, I supported the Korean trade agreement.
Mm.
They promised, President Obama did, that it would increase our exports to Korea by $10 billion. That was in 2011.
Okay.
2015, our trade to Korea went down. Theirs went up. The trade deficit is more than doubled. We've lost thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands of manufacturing jobs.
You're in
this is not working effectively. Trump understood that from years ago, and he will help fix that, and we can fix it, and it will help America, and it will be good for the world.
Yeah, Donald Trump talking all through the weekend about a rigged system, even as FBI Director Comey has said, well, no, we looked at these new emails, and we don't see something, again, we don't see anything worth going after legally there. But nevertheless, Mr. Trump is talking about a criminal trial for Hillary Clinton, and you heard, you know, the lock her up chant. Is there a problem with him, you know, perceiving what proper due process is here in this country?
Absolutely. Everybody's entitled to due process, and that includes Hillary Clinton. You cannot use politics to disadvantage or go after a political opponent. Neither can you use the investigatory system to protect a person politically.
Well, he's cleared her twice. Why is Mr. Trump still talking about locking her up, sir?
Look, you know, one of the things that's difficult to deal with is news media who won't let the other side be heard and won't be talking about the issues that are really important to this country that the American people care about.
But Mr. Trump's talking about this a lot.
I think that she violated certainly the security rules of the State Department, which means she violated law. Mr. Comey has decided not to prosecute her for those violations.
He said there's no basis for prosecution.
He said, I would say it's pretty clear she violated the security of the United States.
No reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case, his words.
He wasn't justified to prosecute her.
Yeah.
That's his decision, I suppose. But what the investigation apparently with regard to the pay-for-play at the Clinton Foundation remains in effect. American people have a very jaundiced view of Hillary Clinton's integrity. They've seen the Clinton team for decades now, and it's always been involving shady activities and always blocking investigations, obstructing the production of evidence, delaying, and that kind of thing. And it's an unhealthy thing, and we could have that presumably again if she were to be elected president. So I hate it, but it's her problem, not Mr. Comey's problem, that she's gotten into these difficulties.
Well, I mean, he is the FBI director, but callers for you. Steve is calling. You're on the air with Senator Jeff Sessions. Steve.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to ask Senator Sessions about his support for Trump's Muslim ban, and I ask this as someone who is married to an immigrant from Lebanon with a Muslim background. I've had to answer questions from my own daughter about why her grandparents could not visit us if Trump were elected. And I've had young children friends asking concerned questions about if my daughter, who is born in the United States, and her mother would be deported if Trump were elected.
Senator Sessions?
Well, I don't think the mother's going to be deported. I think that's not so. And he says we need to have a pause and we need to understand what's happening here. And I would say this. Americans greatly respect religious freedom. It's a high priority for our people, and I value that, and I think all Americans do. However, we are having infiltrators of terrorism into the United States. It's a big issue. People do not have a constitutional right to demand entry to the United States. Our immigration policy should serve the national interest to protect the American citizens from violence and terrorism. And I think it's appropriate to slow down, not to stop immigration from Islamic countries, absolutely not to end that, but to be sure that we're doing it in a way that's effective. The experts tell us we cannot vet The individual we're now bringing in, Hillary Clinton, would like to surge those numbers from 10,000 from Syria that President Obama admitted to 65,000. She has the ability to do that as president. So I think it does raise a legitimate concern. I think it's appropriate to slow down and make sure we're properly vetting people before they enter the United States.
But what about the sense and fear, and you hear it in that caller's, the little girl there, that she, her family, she's American, and she wonders if they're actually welcome. I mean, we heard again yesterday from this Mr. Khizr Khan, who's a son, of course, the U.S. Army captain, died in the Iraq War in 2004. Here he was just yesterday, Senator Sessions.
Would my son, Captain Humayun Khan, have a place in your America? Would Muslims have a place in your America? Would anyone who isn't like you have a place in your America, Donald Trump? Well, thankfully, Mr. Trump, this isn't your America.
Senator Sessions, you hear that concern. Now, he's been very prominent, Democratic convention and so on, and Donald Trump has gone after him, but it's out there. Is Donald Trump dividing the country in this way?
Donald Trump is simply saying we should protect the safety and security of America first. Mr. Khan's son, I served honorably and lost his life serving this country. Millions of Americans operate so well all over our country every day. They're part of who we are as a country. But as we decide how to conduct our foreign policy and our immigration policy, we should consider what's the proper flow into the country and make sure we're not admitting people who might be a danger. And we just have that problem today. And I think it's appropriate to be more careful than we've been.
May I ask you on the
Senator, could I ask
Yeah, sure. Is this Ed? Sahil?
This is Sahil Kapoor.
Yeah, Sahil.
Sahil Kapoor with Bloomberg. Senator, you've been a stalwart voice for many years in favor of cutting immigration levels. It's something you and I have talked a lot about, and Trump has made that a centerpiece of his campaign. I'm wondering, if he loses this election, won't that be a clear signal from the country that Americans do not want to move in Trump's direction or in your direction on the issue of immigration?
No, I do not think that at all. First, what the American people overwhelmingly desire, and it's been a tremendous asset to his campaign, is that they want a lawful system of immigration and that people should apply, wait their time, and be admitted. And we should admit people who have the opportunity to flourish and be successful in America. And that should be our first priority. A good policy should do that. So I think that's that. I think the whole immigration argument, even though it sometimes hasn't been articulated in the best way, but I think that desire is legitimate and good and honest, and the American people should continue to work for that, and they still believe that no matter how this election will come out.
Bo in Montgomery, Alabama, you're on with Senator Sessions.
Hi, Tom, and hi, Senator Sessions.
Hello.
Five years ago, my Blue Cross Blue Shield plan covered my wife and I and four children. It was $642. 4 years ago, it went from $642 to $950. 3 years ago, it went to $1,150. Last year, it went to $1,341 after my two sons, who turned 26, fell off. I just got my notice over the weekend. It's now going to be, for my wife and I and our two daughters, $1,747. I went from $642 to $1,747
in Blue Cross.
Obamacare started. Absolutely. So you tell me this is a good thing. It has not been a good thing. It has taken the individual policy owners all over America, and it has made us pay for all of the others. And that is not fair. It was not equally administrated, and I'm sick of it. What will Trump do if he wins?
Senator Sessions.
It is true. The American people knew that the so-called Affordable Care Act would not work. Polling data showed they opposed it substantially when Congress, the Democrats, rammed it through. If Donald Trump is elected and the Republican Congress does what it did last year, a vote to eliminate Obamacare, he will sign that bill. Barack Obama vetoed it. Hillary Clinton will veto it. Then we'll have to replace it. We're going to have to replace this bill, one in which patients are put at the center and that we don't have these incredibly surging premiums that are not working.
But what's the magical solution to do that, Senator?
We also need to make sure that the patient is at the center of it, and we cannot create a system in which the government runs health care in America. It just never works effectively in that way. So it's going to take hard work. Donald Trump appeared with Drs. John Barrasso and Tom Price in Philadelphia last week. They discussed this issue. It'll have to be done through Congress also. Congress will have a big role in this. But we will be in position, if Donald Trump is elected president, to reverse, to eliminate Obamacare, and then set about to replace it with a plan that will be far more effective than the disastrous one that we have today. And the American people have not favored it when it passed, and it's even less favorable today.
Ed O'Keefe, Tom, question for Senator Sessions?
Yeah, actually, I do. Senator, thanks for doing this, and I know you've been a loyal and devoted surrogate for Donald Trump throughout his campaign. I'm curious, how could he best use your skill set in a Trump administration?
Well, I don't know that I have any skill set that would be helpful to him, except I believe that the American people are fundamentally correct, that their government has gotten too elitist. It has spent too much time with special interests and big money interests and global interests, and they've not been sensitive enough to the concerns of people who worry about having enough money to replace the tires on their car, or be able to give some money for the child to go to school to a special program. People are struggling out here today, and I do believe that the trade deals that I have supported in the past are incorrect, have not produced as they should, and our trading competitors have taken advantage of them. I do believe we shouldn't bring in more workers than we have jobs for.
Okay, but
so those things I believe I have advocated for and have tried to help him promote.
You've been in the Senate for 20 years, sir. You're not part of the elite by having served in Washington for two decades?
Well, yeah, I guess I am. And I've been blessed. We get nice pay, and we had a good health care plan. But for some reason, I think more than my colleagues, I sense the unease that the American people are feeling. I think we should respond to that. And if I believe it's perfectly legitimate to say we want a lawful system of immigration. It's perfectly legitimate to say we need to be more careful about foreign military adventures. We need to fix our health care problem. This is not working. That we need trade that serves the national interest. And I think all of those go beyond just purely partisanship. These are things in which we can get Democrat and Republicans to work together on if we have a strong leader who gets them around the table, said, let's fix this trade thing.
Senator Sessions, we're out of time right there. We're grateful to you for being with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, surrogate for Donald Trump. We heard from former Governor Jennifer Granholm earlier for Hillary Clinton. Ed O'Keefe with The Washington Post and Sahil Kapoor with Bloomberg Politics. Our great thanks to both of you. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.